We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the All-NBA Show, part of the All-City Podcast Network. I'm your host, Adam Mattes, coming to you on this Monday, and I'm joined by my esteemed colleague, Tim Legler. Legs, how was your weekend?
What's up, man? Weekend was great. Living the dream. Getting paid to watch a lot of basketball, man. You can't beat it.
What was your NBA to NCAA ratio this weekend?
Mostly college, I'm not going to lie to you. But listen, there was way more of it, man. Like, yep. It was wall to wall, like, all day long. And then, you know, some compelling college games. And you know how it is with the NBA schedule. You're handpicking a couple a night of the ones that you need to see. But, yeah, I definitely watched a little bit more college. Although I will say I'm a little disappointed. Some of these double-seeded teams are out now. So I guess I'm kind of pulling for NC State, right? So far they're the only double-digit seed to survive those first 2 days.
Yeah, they're fun, man. I like the big boy, DJ Burns, big guy.
Oh, yeah, he's a blast, fun. Man. He's got a great personality. Yeah, I got some friends that are NC State alum. They're all into it, so I guess that'll awesome. Be my team now.
There you go. I pull for them because of David Thompson, so I'm a throwback there. On today's show, we're going to talk about the Thunder and the Bucks. Really big game for the Bucks. I think if you're a Bucks fan, this is like exhibit A of why you should believe in your team, so we're going to break that one down. Warriors-Wolves was also interesting. The Wolves keep winning. They lose Towns. You think they're going to slide? Hanging right there. Pacers-Lakers. Pacers had an interesting weekend. One really great game, one not so great game. So we'll break both of those down. And then we'll just look at some of the other big top storylines from around the association over the weekend. But first, All-NBA sponsored by DraftKings. Stay tuned because you'll hear more about DraftKings and all it has to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours. All right, Legs, let's get into our first game, our top game. The Bucks beating the Thunder. And I shouldn't even just say beating. The Bucks shutting down the Thunder, which doesn't happen very often, and they did that in this game, and in particular in that third quarter where they started on an 18-2 run, held Shea to just 12 points overall. He did not play in the fourth quarter because that third quarter run opened up a 20-point lead. What stood out to you about this one?
Yeah, the Bucks defense, you know, you can look at games or look at box scores sometimes and not get a real idea what this was about. This was, you know, Chet Holmgren definitely – you know, had a rough night, and he missed some shots he normally makes. So he would probably maybe the outlier, because I did feel like his shots were like normal shots for him, and he was 1-for-10. It's probably the worst game he played all year offensively. But that aside, this was more about the Bucks defense than it was about Oklahoma City, in my opinion. I just thought Milwaukee's effort and energy and traffic they created for Shea. And I've talked before about the area of the floor he likes to operate in, you know, between the edges of the lane. Like, that's his area of the floor. He always finds a way to have a counter move to get back and stay within that area. It's very rare for a guard to kind of stay in that area because there is so much traffic and be that effective. He didn't get any – he did not have any space. They were crowding him. They'd had great switches on him. They had multiple guys they could throw on him. When he did get a little bit of an angle and turn the corner, you got a lot of length to shoot over against this team. So I just thought, for me, watching the Bucks all year long, this was as good defensively as you can see them be. which is what, you know, we're hoping, you know, Doc would have that kind of an imprint. And you put it all at Doc Rivers' feet. I don't know. I think Doc has made them play harder. I think they're more accountable to each other. Yeah. I think now, Adam, it's later in the year and they realize like the time was running out to turn this around and be the type of team that can actually contend and win a championship. They weren't going to be that trading baskets with people. They have definitely locked in more. And as you said, I think it's a great way you described it. This will be Exhibit A. If you want to go in there and state your case for why we could potentially still contend with Boston and win a championship this year, that would be the game that you would present and the way you played specifically defensively.
And it should be noted that this is a game that was the first time, let me see, I have it written down here, the first time you've seen the big three, Middleton, Giannis, and Damian Lillard, the first time since February 3rd. So you're talking almost two whole months since you get a look at that. And then I believe it was only the second or third time that the starting five, their preferred starting five, had played together in the Doc era. So this is a team that has been banged up, that has not been playing a lot of games at full strength. And I think it's very easy, when it's not a star player, it's very easy to discount and say, yeah, but you know, you had Giannis and Dame, so what excuse is there? But oftentimes you build a five-man roster. You put specific players around them to complement those guys. And when you don't have it, some things can be thrown out of whack. But I look at this one and I go, their starting five has the best net rating of any five-man lineup to play 250 minutes at least. Better than Denver, better than Boston's, although by a tiny margin. That's a big indicator for me. And then when you see them get a statement performance like this, 118-93, and just dominate the Oklahoma City Thunder, the fewest points the Thunder have scored this year, to me, I just feel like that's an important stat, that starting lineup is this good. They don't play together very often, especially over the last 2 months. And then when they do play together for the first time, it's absolutely dominant.
I completely agree with you. And the other thing that's been, you know, important for the Bucks, you get Chris Middleton back. He misses over a month. Comes back, and he's had three really good games. He didn't have a great scoring game in this one, but he had a triple-double. I mean, he you know, and that's yeah. Chris Middleton at his best is a guy that's going to contribute on the glass. He's going to be a guy that can handle the ball, and he's not the player that he was 4 or 5 years ago, not the player that he was when he won a championship, but he can still be super effective. And I think on a given night now, Adam, it's been interesting to me to watch. A lot of teams, like clearly Giannis and Dame are the two most important and you know, most talented offensive players. Yeah. It was always Chris Middleton, right? We always talked about Middleton. Well, Middleton, if Middleton's healthy, and when Chris Middleton plays like this, like we always started sentences like that with the Bucks. And I'm thinking now it's actually a situation where take your pick who's more important on a given night. Is it him or is it Portis? Because I think Bobby Portis is every bit as critical to them offensively because he has matchups that he wins. Yeah. If he gets a smaller guy on him, he's going to back you down and shoot that turnaround jumper, and he just does not miss it, particularly on the left side of the court. He's always looking to get space from the three-point line. It feels like Bobby Portis on the court a lot when they make runs. So now it doesn't feel like, hey, if Middleton doesn't play well offensively, what they're kind of screwed. No, actually, now Bobby Portis is at a level that I'm kind of expecting these kinds of games out of him. So it doesn't have to be Middleton. They've got four guys now offensively that do it. You got your top two, and I still think Lillard hasn't really hit full stride. I still think, and he might not this year. It might take another, you know, an offseason and another year to get fully comfortable with how to play with Giannis because I think he's a little bit streaky still. Those other two guys, they're critical to them. And have Middleton playing this well when Portis has been this good all season long, you know, it's just like everything about what we're saying is making us sort of buy in more to the Milwaukee Bucks and think that, okay, yes, Boston's clearly the best team. I think the gap over the last month has been narrowed. And this is now a legitimate conversation, I think, that we weren't going to have, you know, 6 weeks ago.
Right. For me, I have a hot take later on the show about the Bucks, but we'll get to it here in a second. Let's go back to the Dame piece. I believe over the last 2 months, he is running, really since Doc Rivers arrived, the second most pick and rolls of any player in the NBA. I think Jalen Brunson is number one in pick and roll frequency when he's on the court. Damian Lillard, number two. And when I'm just watching, this is anecdotal, but it feels almost like running more pick and roll with Bobby Portis. So when you get those staggered lineups and he's out there, it almost is like every time you're running there, and he has a great connection with Portis. I don't know if it is the thing you're talking about, we've talked about all year, about Dame is a little bit more comfortable when he doesn't have to worry about a second star and he can just go. But there's also this synergy between them. To your point, Bobby Portis is good at punishing that switch, and they get it to him a lot where it's just like, okay, Bobby Portis is one of those guys that's good at bully ball. So that dynamic is what's interesting to me. You have a great you played great defense last night. We'll get back to that in a second. You have a great stagger with both of your stars. I feel like those are huge pieces of this puzzle. And when you say there's more room to grow, I think what you're saying is their best punch almost doesn't feel quite what we expect it to be. Their best punch can be better, but all the other stuff is starting to fall into place.
That's a great way to put it. That's exactly how I feel. I do feel like there's still something more that when they get humming at the highest level, we haven't seen that consistently. And I still think maybe that's there for them to find, which is that'll make it even a more interesting conversation with Boston. The thing about Portis is interesting. Yeah, he punishes the switches because he's so good backing you down and shooting that little turnaround over you. His ability to screen on the perimeter and sprint, like dead sprint to the open three-point area, 15, 20 feet away, it's really unusual because he screens, sprints. Like if he sets the screen on, let's say, sort of like the right slot or the right wingish area, he will sprint past the middle of the floor to the opposite wing after he screens, and he's sort of running and twisting his body at the same time. And when it hits his hands, his feet are set and he lets it fly. And sometimes I'm like, man, he didn't even really get a good look at the rim because he's coming out of these spins. He doesn't screen and then like backpedal to the spot. Like a lot of screen guys that want to pick and pop, they'll pick and then they'll like backpedal. So they're always facing the ball. He runs with his back to the ball and then spins out of it as the ball's on the way to him, catches it, lets it fly. It just shows you like how much confidence he has now in that shot. He's got great court awareness, spatial awareness. He knows where he is. He lets it fly. I've been talking about Bobby Portis for the last like 3 years because of the impact he has on this team, but I feel like it's never been as consistent as it is right now. I almost was about to say he is clearly their third best offensive player right now, but I don't think it's clear. I still think Middleton, because of his ability to handle the ball, and he's shooting 57% in the three games since he came back. He's got to be feeling pretty good right now. All things very positive for the Bucks, and this is the kind of game when you do it on both ends. And the first half was sort of like a street fight. Milwaukee scored 70 points in the second half after scoring 48 in the first half. So the second half, they got cooking offensively, but their defense was fantastic throughout this game, and they just completely stalled a normally potent Oklahoma City offense.
So let's go back to the defense here. So after the game, Doc Rivers and the players, I think it was Bobby Portis who was interviewed after the game, who said, this is the most connected we've been all season long. And I think that's a good way to put it. Now, offensive connection, they made some shots, they made their run. I'm not ready to give them full offensive connectivity stamp just yet, because that's when we're saying we think they have more. That's what I think we're going to see over these next 11, 12 games. But defensively, that was a very connected performance, because there were a lot of possessions last night that required 5, 6, 7 rotations. You know, guys flying out at shooters, then everybody scrambling on the backside. And that's what Oklahoma City does to you. To have a great defensive performance against some teams, you could say, okay, well, ball got stagnant. Was it impressive? I don't know. Oklahoma City, if you shut them down, it's impressive, because they move the ball, they spread you out. And last night, it was just tons of rotations where everybody on that team was, one, giving full effort, and two, reading each other. You're closing out there, I'm going to X out over here. We're switching on this, I'm going to drop on that. That was the part that was so impressive to me, is it was execution that stood out on the defensive end.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I watched the third quarter again. I watched that twice because I wanted to see. That's where the game got away from Oklahoma City. That's where the separation came. And you're right. And it requires a lot of communication, and it requires anticipation for the next rotation. When you see teams that struggle defensively, whether it's, you know, in general, they're not a good defense team, or on a specific night, they weren't very good defensively, a lot of times, and this actually happened to the Warriors, we're going to talk about the game, this happened to the Warriors in some big moments for them, where the anticipation of the next rotation was late, because that's what it takes. Number one, you have to have the scheme and game plan going in when you see sets. This is how we're going to play it depending on the personnel. Like, that's just how NBA teams work. You're going to talk about those things. That's the first thing. Do you have a good game plan in general? Bucks did. Secondly, are you communicating in the moment as the action's about to take place so that everybody understands we're all on the same page? We know what this is. We've seen this, and we're prepared for this now. And then the last part is the rotation or the next action defensively is anticipatory. It's not, a half second late, which is the difference between a guy, you know, taking a semi to fully contested three and having that extra half second to take an uncontested shot. And with a team like Oklahoma City, yep, they're counting on that. They were 10 for 43 from the three. They shot 23% from the three-point line. And a lot of it was because of the Bucks. They were early on their closeouts. They were early on their next action defensively. And it makes all the difference in the world when you watch something visually even, and it's standing out to you at home if you're an NBA fan, and you're like, wow, man, these guys are getting after it. What I'm describing is why. The next action is anticipated. They're moving a half second even before they have to, because they understand where the flow of the ball is going, and they're closing down that space just to make everything more congested and make guys put it down one more time. If you do that enough times in an NBA game, you are going to have a great opportunity to win. You're going to have a great defensive performance like they had last night.
If there's one reason to buy the Bucks now, I want to talk this about both about the Bucks and the Thunder, because one of the questions I've had with the Thunder is, you know, in the playoffs, when teams try to key in on certain things, how do you respond to them? And the one thing they're going to key in on, what Milwaukee did last night, was building a wall against Shea. This is what you were talking about at the very start. It's the defense you're supposed to play against Giannis. You have to wall off the paint, send early help, and really be big, be long, and then you're vulnerable to closeouts and kickouts there, and you've got to scramble like hell behind it once the kickout comes. They did a great job of that, but that's what teams do in the playoffs. They really key in on this is how we have to shut it down, and to beat it, the closeouts and the rotations behind it have to be 100%. Milwaukee did that last night, and look, it was an off night. I'm not trying to go too hard on the Thunder, but this is what I worry about with the Thunder, is that when you do sort of blockade what it is they're trying to do, things can snowball on them. And them having an 18-2 run, scoring 2 points in 6 minutes to start the third quarter, those are the things that scare me about the Thunder. Do you feel like there was something revealing about how Milwaukee was able to execute that game plan, or was it just an off night for the Thunder?
I would say definitely Oklahoma City was just not in rhythm. Like it wasn't them. I've watched a ton of Oklahoma City this year. That didn't look like them. But I think Milwaukee was, with their pressure and way they were taking away space, had a lot to do with it. But Oklahoma City was not very good last night by their standards. Clearly, I think the one thing that I did notice, that when I watch Oklahoma City and they struggle at times, was very prevalent last night: the size difference. You know, Milwaukee's a plus 20 on the glass. They have 15 offensive rebounds. And that's the one thing we look at Oklahoma City, and you know that's a problem. And it's really a problem if they're not operating to the fullest extent offensively. Now you got a problem on your hands, and that's what they had last night. I'm not saying that every team can replicate that. Giannis had 8 offensive rebounds by himself. There's one Giannis Antetokounmpo in this league, right? So you're not going to get that every night, but there are certainly teams in the Western Conference that are going to be able to hurt you big time on the offensive glass. You know, Dallas and Denver come to mind right off the top of my head as two teams that can really hurt you with their offensive rebounding. And so it's different if you're taking a ball out of the net a lot, that's going to be different, because now you're okay, well, that's fine. That's our weakness. We just scored 125 points. What are you going to do about that? Well, they didn't last night. They were under 100. Now that becomes a much more significant glaring weakness. Your inability to secure that one shot defensively when you're not scoring as well on the other end of the floor.
I'm buying the Bucks. I think my official opinion on this is there's too many indicators for me. Like the Bucks, their flaws throughout the year have stood out. I think connection is such a big part. Going into the playoffs, you have a lot of talented teams. Which ones are sort of coalescing and becoming a unit? And Milwaukee, to me, is showing a lot of signs of that. There's still more to go, but defensively, they're starting to show that. And then their best, you know, starting lineup, and even their secondary, I think their best starting lineup with Beasley and the big three and then Lopez, that one's been great. But if you swap Chris Middleton for Jay Crowder, that lineup has also been great. So if you combine those two, it's like 500 minutes, big four plus one of those two wings has been phenomenal. I look at that and I go, that lineup's going to play a ton of minutes in the playoffs. I'm buying it. I think that they have 11, 12 games. They're going to need all of them to sort of round into form. But I'm buying the Bucks. I actually think they're really good. We expected them to be really good coming into the year. I think a lot of people sold stock, but I'm rebuying all the Milwaukee stock as we round towards the playoffs.
What's going to be interesting for Milwaukee, okay, right now they're obviously not catching Boston. And it's going to be interesting to watch Boston manage these last 10, 11 games. But that kind of a pad, that kind of a lead, you clearly can't just completely take your foot off the gas. That's dangerous for your rhythm.
Denver did it last year, though.
Yeah, they did, but Denver is probably the smartest team in the league, the way that they play together. You know, okay. Boston is a team that at times can, I think, can help you guard them. So I'm curious to see what they're going to do. They're clearly going to try to preserve guys, and they're going to pick their spots, and they're going to stagger the rest and all of that. Milwaukee is three games up on the three spot. I don't think they're getting caught. They got an interesting schedule, Adam. You look at it, they got the Lakers tomorrow. Then they go to New Orleans. That's going to be a tough game. New Orleans, they're important in New Orleans. But they look at their next four games: Atlanta, Washington, Memphis, Toronto. I mean, you can't get a better four-game stretch, right? So by the time they get through that, it'll be over. No one's catching them, and they probably won't anyway. But so then you got New York, Boston, Orlando, Oklahoma City, Orlando. You finish with all these good teams, but by then, two's going to be locked up. I'm really interested to see how Boston and Milwaukee, because to your point, they're just starting to get this level of connection. So do you get to a point where, you know, you're up four or five games with five to play? What do you do then if you're Doc Rivers? Because you want to keep this momentum going. But I know the way teams think, man, it's all about preservation and making sure nobody gets hurt, and let's just go into this thing fully healthy. So it'll be interesting to watch. But I do know this, and it's good. It's a good thing for us. It's a good thing for the league. It's a good thing for everybody that does this for a living. There is now something worth talking about when it comes to who's going to challenge the Boston Celtics.
Yeah,
I thought the Knicks had a chance to do it if they could ever get healthy. I don't think that's going to happen with Julius Randle. So I think that kind of takes them out of the mix. Cleveland's a good team. They're not on that level. Milwaukee is the one team I look at and say that could be a worthy challenger, but it never felt like they were getting into that category. And I agree with you. I think they are now rounding into form on that level to at least be able to challenge the Boston Celtics.
Well, cue that intermission music, Emma. We'll take a break here. I will say Milwaukee right now looks to be locked into the two, almost certainly. And they're almost certainly going to face, that means, either the Pacers, the Heat, or the 76ers. All of those are very compelling first-round matchups. So I love it. We're shaping up for a very good home stretch to find out who plays who. All right, let's take a break. On the other side, the Warriors and the Wolves. Does the Wolves keep winning? The Warriors keep losing? We'll talk about that one on the other side. But first, let me tell you guys about AG1. What are your goals as we get ready for spring? We're not that far away from beach weather, pool weather, whatever it is. You want to start getting into shape and building good habits? Why don't you check out AG1? They've got all of those things, all those great nutrients, vitamins, and things to start your day. I have replaced my coffees in the morning with an AG1. It's the first thing I drink as I get up. You just put the powder into the water, stir it up in 8 ounces of water, chug it, and you get all of those different vitamins, nutrients, and everything you need to start your day. You'll be feeling more energized without that drop you get from drinking too much caffeine. So check it out. You're going to want to go, let's see here. Where do I have my website listed on it here? Athletic Greens. You're going to go to drinkag1.com/allNBA. That's drinkag1.com/allNBA. And if you try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/allNBA. Also want to tell you guys about DraftKings Sportsbook. How did you do this weekend betting on March Madness? Well, you got two more weekends ahead. If you bet, usually people have the strategy, just bet the underdogs. You might have got cleaned out over the weekend as all the favorites were winning this time. March Madness, you never know what you're going to get. Right now, DraftKings has that deal. If you bet $5, you get $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. That's extending into the second week. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code ALLNBA. New customers bet $5 and get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code ALLNBA. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/promos for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Back here in the back half of the All-NBA show on this Monday. This week, we are Monday through Thursday. So usually we take Wednesdays off and go to Friday. This week, we're going to go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday for you. So plan accordingly. And if you're watching live, don't forget to hit that like button. If you're not watching live, leave us a comment. And remember, you can download this as a podcast wherever you get your podcast app so you can listen to it on the go. All right, Legs. The Timberwolves got a win last night, 114-110. They continue to roll despite losing Karl-Anthony Towns. Rudy Gobert back in this game. And the story for me is that the Timberwolves hit 21 three-pointers. You don't think of them as a team that's going to go off 21 threes, but here we are. The Warriors go down once again. I feel like the Warriors keep finding ways to lose and the Wolves keep finding ways to win.
Man, this was a great game. Very entertaining. Both teams playing incredibly hard. It felt like a playoff game. Very entertained throughout. Warriors really controlled the game for the first three quarters for the most part. And then it was a little back and forth in the fourth quarter, but they had opportunities that they didn't take advantage of. The Minnesota did. They capitalized on those. And Golden State's margin for error is so much smaller than it used to be. Right? Back in the day, they could survive missing shots at the rim in a tie game inside 3 minutes. And, you know, they had enough shot makers on the court. They were going to be able to make up for that. Yeah. You know, with guys other than Steph Curry, their margin of error is not as good, man. And they're going to give up stuff on the other end with size and in the paint. And that's basically what happened at the end of this game. They did not convert a couple of critical possessions. Minnesota made them pay on the other end, got some easy stuff in the paint at the rim. Anthony Edwards had a really big three during that stretch. And on a night when if you feel like Golden State did everything they could possibly do to beat a team this good on the road, they still come up short at the end, and Minnesota makes the plays to get the win. And it was really across the board with the number of guys that had major contributions. Mike Conley was sensational down the stretch for this team. Naz Reid was great the entire game. Gobert had big moments. Anthony Edwards was big in this game. Who am I forgetting? Oh, Jane McDaniels had a couple of really big shots during that stretch. Your guy, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, your second favorite player in the league besides Isaiah Hartenstein, had some moments in this game as well. So team effort, Golden State, just as usual, played more close games than anybody in the league, have a very difficult time closing it out.
So why is that? Why can't they close it? What are you seeing from them? Because to your point, they used to be the best in the league at closing things out. But what are you seeing from them that they can't get over this hump?
Well, the biggest thing is because they don't have enough guys consistently good offensively on a given night. You really don't. Even last night, Curry really was spectacular throughout the game, but he shot 9-for-21. It wasn't one of his best nights. He still got to 31 against an elite defensive team. But they don't have enough guys that like you really can count on, or even a group of guys, Adam, that Steve Kerr completely like knows. Like, this is my five that we're going to have on the floor for the last 6 minutes, and this is how we're going to close the game offensively. He's still on a night-to-night basis kind of plug and play around Curry. And that's tough, man. It's tough to be able to win close games when that's the situation. And I think, you know, they battled, man, and they hung in there. A couple times it looked like Minnesota was about to turn that into a 12 to 15 point game, and Golden State made a couple baskets to get it back to a one possession. But I will say this also. Right. To the first quarter of this game, if you went back and watched this first quarter, Minnesota should have been down 16, 18 points at the end of the first quarter. And look, that's a big hole now. Who knows? Maybe it's a different outcome. The fact that they were hanging around, it was only nine, it really felt like Golden State blew a massive opportunity because Minnesota was turning the ball over. They weren't shooting well. And Golden State had enough trips that were empty trips when they could have pushed this thing out beyond 15 points. Maybe it's a 20-point lead even. You know, early second quarter, they just did not capitalize enough on the opportunities given them early in the game, and it allowed Minnesota to be within arm's reach. And eventually they made their run and took control of the game. And now you put it in the hands of who's going to execute better down the stretch. In Minnesota, we've questioned that about them, but they were better in the last couple minutes of the game than Golden State was, which is really trying to do it through one guy on the perimeter and create all kinds of havoc around Curry, and let's hope we get something out of that. Minnesota is going to do it a little differently. They're going to do it with athleticism and size and you know, get you that way. And they, in addition to that, they had some big-time three-point shots that were made in the fourth quarter.
The other thing about the size that stood out to me in this game, Golden State, I thought, had a really hard time getting into the paint. Now, they would get offensive rebounds. They would get, like, some of these slashes when the defense broke down. But when you talk about, like, Steph just having to make something happen, I thought he had a really hard time doing anything inside the three-point line. And that's the Rudy Gobert effect. But it's also just the accumulative length effect that we keep talking about with this Warriors team. To me, that's why, if you're selling the Warriors, and there's a million little indicators of why, even though we both agree that they keep being this close, they seem like they're about to get over the hump, but they never do. But if you're really selling the Warriors, I think that's one of the biggest things, is these big teams seem to be able to keep them out of the paint in ways that they used to collapse defenses so much and live in the paint. No matter how big you were, they would collapse you and get you scrambling and getting wide open layups. They're not getting those, especially Steph. Steph isn't getting those layups anymore.
And the biggest reason that that's the case is because they just do not have the same threat level from the three-point line that the teams have been before that won championships and contended every year. Like, they had guys out there that were so lethal when they'd run all of their dribble handoff and split action and all of that. You got such an overreaction to that. Yep. That now, bam, there goes a back cut layup with nobody back there as a second line of defense. They don't get that as much because teams aren't extended as much, with the exception of Curry. They're not as extended as much with multiple guys getting that kind of action. I think teams kind of feel like, well, if Andrew Wiggins wants to make some threes against us, go ahead. Draymond, you can have whatever you want. Gary Payton a second, be my guest. Podziemski, go ahead. Klay, very streaky. These are all the guys that normally would have been guys in those spots that, like, you were counting on. Some of them, it's the same name I just mentioned, but they were just doing it at a higher level. They were more consistent. So the threat level was much higher to get teams to extend, and now you would get these sort of back cuts and these different actions. Even Draymond, like, running the fake dribble handoff, getting to the rim, like, stuff like that in key moments. Now it doesn't feel like that is as much of an option for them, and they're very much living – you have barely within the margins. And that's why, listen, they're a 500 team, basically. Mm-hmm. They're a 500 team. And that's what they are when you can't convert and close games that are one possession games. And they have a very difficult time doing it.
It seems unthinkable. And we wrote off the Houston Rockets, you know, 2 weeks ago. Whenever we talked about them last, we wrote them off. But now they're on this win streak. The Warriors keep losing these close games. And now they're separated by one game. Legs. I guess it is time. I was going to ask you, should we be talking? Of course we should be talking about it. It's one game. But, you know, where do you see this headed with Houston? Is this going to become a storyline here now that Houston could overtake them?
Well, I really can't believe that you're teeing me up on this topic right now, because you're right. You know, 2 weeks ago, this was a wrap. We knew, we knew, like, where the cutoff line was, and it was going to be those 10 teams above it. We just didn't know what exactly the order was going to be, but nobody was getting run down from behind. And now here's Houston. Now, I will say this. Houston has a brutal schedule the rest of the way. So we're really going to find out a lot about them. It doesn't start tonight. They got Portland tonight at home. That should be a win. There's no question. That's going to be a win. I'm going to put that out there right now. I don't even know what the line is. I'm betting money on it. I don't care what the line is. Houston's going to win that game. That'll be nine straight. Then it gets Oklahoma City, Utah, Dallas, Minnesota, Golden State, Miami, Dallas, Orlando. I mean, finish with the Clippers last game of the year. That's a lot. And a lot of those teams are still playing for their lives or playing for seeding or whatever it may be. So who knows where it's ultimately going to go with Houston. Golden State's schedule much more favorable. They do play each other next Thursday. That could be for all the marbles, man. Yeah, that could be. Yeah. And that game is actually in Houston. So that could be the one, you know, that'll decide this. But I can't believe that we're talking about it. Look, and a lot of it has to do with what's going on with Jalen Green. I mean, the guy has gone out of the stratosphere here over the last month, man. We know how he's uber talented. He's explosive, but didn't really, I think a lot of times earlier in the year, he struggled with, like, understanding, like, how to be efficient and what was a good shot and what was a good play to make. He's tightened that up some, man. And now his raw athleticism is being instinctive. He's not thinking as much. And now Houston, because they're getting 30 a night, basically, out of that spot. Boom, they're playing with all the confidence in the world, and they're looking at a team like Golden State that's struggling. And I think Houston feels like, hey, man, we've tracked them down now. Let's go in for the kill. Let's officially run them down and get into this play-in. And I can't believe we're talking about it, but we have to. Here it is. And it maybe comes down to that game next Thursday, Adam, to decide which one of these teams. If Golden State still has a lead going into that game, if they're one game up or whatever, win that game. And I don't know, actually, I should probably know this, but I don't know what the tiebreaker is between those two teams. earlier in the year.
Off my head, yeah.
But if I mean, I'll look. Well, before we get off the air, we'll make sure we have that information to find out what the tiebreaker situation is. Because for one of those teams, if they're like neck and neck, and one of them's got the tiebreaker, you win that game, you pretty much put it away.
Yeah, Emma, can you look up the record between those two teams, Houston and Golden State? I'm curious to find out what that is as well. Head to head, they probably played each other three times, I'm guessing, this year, or will play each other three times total.
To my knowledge, it looks like they're 0-2 against Golden State. Golden State beat them early in the year, October 29th. They beat them again November 20th. And it does not look like they played again. So I think they're 0-2. So Golden State will have the tiebreaker. That's huge.
So that is huge.
If they're still up a game going into that game, they could really end it. Because if you go up two and you have the tiebreaker, you're basically up three games with about five to play. It'll be a wrap if Golden State can just hold them off until that game. Yep.
I think you're right. That does make for a huge implication for that one. If we go to the other side, Minnesota, another team that it's not that we wrote them off, but with the injuries, you said, okay, they're probably going to fall in the standings. And they have. They were number one when the injury happened. They're number three now. So they have fallen in the standing, but only by a half game. So they're a half game behind the Thunder and a full game behind the Denver Nuggets, and they play the Nuggets twice, including this Friday. By the way, that's going to be a huge game. Friday night in Denver, with both teams having a night off of a rest to prepare for that one, and it's going to carry enormous implications. I might even go as far as to say that game will likely determine the higher seed between those two teams. So that game is going to be huge. But the Timberwolves have held on. They have not been losing the way we kind of expected maybe they would. They got a win over Cleveland. Now they get this win over Golden State. Earlier in the week, or last week, they had a win over the Clippers. Those are three big wins that all could have been losses when you just looked at the schedule. So what have you seen from them since Karl-Anthony Towns has gone down? Now they get Gobert back. And do you feel like they can continue this winning to close out the year?
Well, I want to start by saying I love Naz Reid. All right. I'm curious, and I don't know off the top of my head, and we're not going to do it today, but I really would like to know, if I went up all, and down all other 29 teams in the NBA, how many teams would you say Naz Reid could start for? Whether it's as your starting center, or because of his athletic ability and his lateral movement and his shooting ability, play the four. Net for certain teams.
I was thinking about it this morning.
Like put him in Philadelphia, right off of Embiid, and replace Tobias Harris with Naz Reid. You're a better team. You have more versatility defensively. You've got a guy that right now is shooting it from deep at a higher rate. Can play off of Embiid. He also, by the way, could be like your backup center when Embiid's off the court. Like, I'm just using that as a hypothetical example. I haven't heard any rumors there, but I'm just saying, like, I look at other situations with Naz Reid as a starter on contending teams. Like, I think Naz Reid could be that. But as it is, look, they've got three guys. Towns is out, so right now they have two. But you know, he lines up next to Gobert, and it gives them such a different look. And Golden State had all kinds of problems last night with their communications on Gobert's dives. And he does it a lot. He screens and dives hard. And they just did a terrible job at the weak side of the court. It would have two defenders. One of those guys has to bump on the – when Gobert dives, you don't have to guard him all the way to the rim. You just have to hit him to slow him up so he doesn't momentum for a lob. And now you've got to recover out because there's going to be two guys on the weak side of the floor with that last guy trying to guard both. And they messed that up a number of times. The communications on it, they were late. It led to some open, naked looks on the opposite wing or the corner from where Gobert was diving. And one of those guys spotted was Naz Reid. So like they're panicking, trying to get to him because he can absolutely string together shots and take over a quarter. So I just want to say, like, I think a big part of this has just been how great Naz Reid has been for them in the absence of the other two bigs. You know, playing now when Gobert's back and playing alongside of him, how easy he is to plug into it. He gives you great energy defensively, and he's shooting the hell out of the ball right now. 45% in the month of March with really high volume from the three-point line. For a guy that's 6'10", 6'11", that's that athletic defensively, I just think he's been a tipping point for this team right now for me.
Yeah, they're playing great. Get your popcorn ready. They have Detroit this week. That should be a gimme. And then they have the Nuggets on Friday, and that one just should be a playoff-like atmosphere. I'm so excited for that one. Let's move on.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Talk about our last game that we were going to go in depth on today, which is the Lakers beating the Pacers. You like scoring 150 to 145 in this game. All right, talk me through it. What did you see in this one?
My goodness, man. First of all, the thing that's shocking is, and this is more of an indictment, I think, I'm going to say it's more of an indictment on the Pacers than it is a pat on the back for Lakers. Lakers aren't supposed to play games like this, Adam. They can't play games like this. They can't play games like this. Like,
so true.
This is their worst nightmare to play this kind of a pace against a team that in Indiana, this is exactly how they want to play. And to the point where they're going up and down and they're looking at the Lakers saying, are you sure you really want to do this? Like at this level, because at some point we're going to hit you with a barrage. You're not going to keep up this pace. And yet Lakers said, no, that's fine. We're cool. 78 points in the second half, 72 in the first half. Are you kidding me? So I think I look at the Pacers, who have been a very interesting team for me all year, because I still think that's a team that could be scary to play in a playoff series. Because of the way that they play, it's different than most teams in this league. I'm not saying they would beat one of the top seeds in the East. What I'm saying is, though, would I be shocked? Look at the way they played against Milwaukee all year. If they got the Bucks in a first-round series and they, like, won the first game, and now all of a sudden Milwaukee's heart rate's up. No, I'm not going to be shocked by that. Now, I think the Bucks would go on and figure it out and win the series. I think Boston clearly beat them. But, you know, if this were a 3-6 and any of those other teams against a team like this, it's just so different. I think you could make adjustments as the series went on and probably survive it and be okay. But man, this would be a scary team to have to prepare for, because it's a lot different the way that they play. And the Lakers to say, that's fine, let's go, let's make this a track meet, lace them up and win playing that way. I'm absolutely shocked that the Lakers had the type of stamina to be able to do that. But I think it's probably a little bit more of an indictment on Indiana's defense when they're bad defensively.
It definitely is. I mean, they gave up 70 points in the paint, which is just, and it's not the first time. They've done this year to some of these big teams. I will say that I'm with you on this, in that it's both encouraging and discouraging if you're the Pacers. One, it's encouraging that you were able to play your game. It's always meaningful to say whose style of game was it? Who controlled the pace? They controlled the pace, but it's discouraging that you lost while getting that. Maybe it's, 12 of 25 from the Lakers from the three-point line, 48%, pretty good number, although it wasn't that high of a volume at 25. Maybe you could say that. Here's my thought on the Pacers from watching this one. The Pacers have perfected the art of the good, bad shot, meaning they take a lot of shots that I go, man, that's an insane shot. But it's a high-volume transition. Only 2 seconds came off the clock, and you're open. You let it launch. And they've perfected that, not just in nicking them, but how to play off of that. They seem to get a lot of offensive rebounds off of these good, bad shots in transition. And it creates chaos. This is why they control the pace, is they lure you into this very high tempo. They're comfortable getting a transition shot that's like a B-minus shot. They're just comfortable off it. And that I mean that as a compliment. They're really good at those bad shots.
No, that's a great way to put it. And what's interesting about this game, you look at the game, the Pacers had 39 assists, which is an outrageous total for an NBA game. The Lakers had 28. So you go, wow, how is that? Well, it's because of what you said. They were turning the corner, putting their head down, getting to the rim. And they had 38 made free throws, 38 in this game to 9 for Indiana. That describes the mentality between the two teams. And by the way, you remember, this was exactly the Lakers' formula in the in-season tournament, the way that they beat them. They had 87 points, I believe, in the paint in that game, something to that effect. So that's where the Lakers are going to get you. There's another thing about the Pacers I wanted to bring up, and give me your thoughts. Tyrese Halliburton has been good. He hasn't been great for a pretty long stretch now, Adam. When you look at where he was and the way that he was being talked about, right, and leading up early part of the year into the in-season tournament, a little bit beyond that, but 16 points a game for the entire month of March. And I understand he's like a dual threat, and he's going to beat you with facilitating a lot of nights too. But on this team, they also actually need Tyrese Halliburton, particularly in close games, to be like an elite level scorer. And whether that's from the three or getting to the, he's got some floaters he'll throw at you or get to the rim. He's been good, and he's shooting 43% in the month of March. So that's another thing. Like, we haven't talked a lot about that, like where he had ascended to. And I think he is understanding, and going into this offseason, I think he's going to have a very thorough knowledge of this is what happens when you emerge to that extent. And the way that you're now being prepared for, the way that you're being guarded, and is there another gear now for you to overcome that? Because that is what the great players in this league do. It doesn't matter eventually what you throw at them. It's not going to affect them. I think Tyrese Halliburton being like good, not great, is contributing also to the Indiana Pacers on nights like this when they're not getting these wins. And he wasn't great last night.
Yeah. It's interesting looking at his splits throughout the year, because he was averaging 29 points a game in November, and that's over 13 games. That's a lot of games, 29 points. And then in December, that's down to 21.5. And then in January, 18, February and March, 16. So you're right that all year long it's dropped. And it's not like you think, okay, well, maybe he's passing more. His assists are also down. There's a correlation of all productivity. So there was injuries in there. There was a trade in there. There's reasons to believe in the disruption. But to your point, when I was watching, when I'm talking about the good, bad shots, he's a big part of this. I think there's a level of volatility to his game right now that he can correct by adding a little bit more, a few more layers. But he's one of those guys where even last night, there were a few shots where I'm thinking, it's not that it's a bad shot. It just seems like that you're comfortable with, okay, dribble three steps in, three steps backwards, launch a three. You can take those, but it does feel like he's almost more dependent on those. And he hits them at a high rate, so I'm not going to sit here and just over-complain about it. But I do think there's players where it's, what is the counter now to all of those different decisions, and where can you play? And I think that's what, when you talk about teams defending him and learning how to defend him, I think it's that you're talking about, the counter, so you're not going to the step backwards three or dribble backwards three six times a game. You're going to it maybe more as a counterpunch.
Well, let me ask you a question, because I got the impression when I said earlier that I thought that they are still – kind of like a dangerous team for certain teams to have to play in the first round. Do you agree or not? Right now, they're barely holding on to the sixth spot. So they're half game up on the Heat. Who knows how that plays out? And Philadelphia's right there too. So who knows how those three teams play out? One of those teams is going to escape that, and they're going to end up playing either Cleveland or New York. So let's just say, hypothetically, Indiana held on to the sixth spot.
Okay.
And they played either one of those two teams. Do you not think that that would be a long series?
It's tough because those are really good defensive teams. So you're talking about a strength versus strength sort of matchup. The thing I'll say about Indiana in a first round matchup is they're so different from every other team that I think you get that part of it. You guard them differently, and you have to emphasize different things than you have to everyone else. And that just naturally creates a little bit of chaos. But no, I would not pick them, I don't think, to beat the Knicks. That's not a...
Yeah, as we sit here right now, I probably wouldn't either. But I think if they hold on to that sixth spot to do that over their last 10 games, that means they're probably going to have to play pretty well. They're going to have to probably go, let's say, 7-3, like something like that, to hold on to that spot. And if they do, and they've got momentum, and they're playing well, and they're hot going in to that series, and we still... And if it was the Knicks... And you're looking at a Knicks team that's still kind of banged up a little bit. I don't know. I'm not saying I'd pick them right now, but I do think like I'd have to spend some time there between, you know, that last day of the season, that Sunday, and, you know, whenever they would play their first round game, which would be the following weekend. I would spend a lot of time like analyzing that and see how that's going to turn out, because I do think Indiana would go long against the Knicks or Cleveland. I could see that being 6 or 7 games.
Yeah. Real quickly, so let's just go through this. We'll probably do this again here in a couple of weeks, but Boston, who would you be your preferred realistic matchup? You're just basically looking at the Pacers and the 4 play-in teams. Who would be your favorite matchup to watch?
Boston, and you mean between, if it were Boston, and who would I prefer them to play against?
6 through 10, because all 6 through 10 are all possibilities to be the 8 seed. So yeah, who do you think would make the best series?
Oh, without question, I'd say Miami. Think Miami, unless Embiid comes back. If Embiid comes back, then that's different. I can't even describe what that does to everything if you drop that on the Eastern Conference playoffs going right in. So maybe we Philly, if he's back and he gets 5 games under his belt and he looks pretty good and his stamina is okay, maybe Philadelphia.
What about Milwaukee? What would make for the most interesting matchup?
Oh, definitely Indiana. Based on what happened in the regular season, how could you not want to see that, right? Yep. And especially like the way that it got to the point where they beat them, and there was all kinds of talk, all kinds of stuff going back and forth, and they played again and they smoked them. And like, wow, like Milwaukee wasn't able to answer that bell. So that's definitely the matchup I think that would be most interesting. Although Milwaukee-Philly would be pretty fascinating too if it ended up being that with Giannis and Embiid.
And then if we go just to the Orlando Magic, because they look like they're the most likely to be locked into the 5 seed, who would you rather them face, the Knicks or the Cavs?
Definitely would rather see them play the Knicks. I'd love to see Orlando, New York in the first round. That would be fantastic. And Orlando, man, they've been amazing. They just keep getting it done. 7 out of their last 10 still, like this late in the year. I feel like every time I look up at their last 10, they're north of 500 all year long. It's the consistency with which they've been doing it. Give them a massive pat on the back, man. But I'd like to see that. Give me some Paolo Banchero going up against that Knicks defense.
Man, that would be a 90s throwback series right there. 89-92. Grind it out, physical, gritty. That would be a lot of fun. That would leave you with Cavs, I believe, Heat or 76ers, whichever one is left. That would be, in my opinion, 4 great playoff series.
Yeah.
We get that set up. That would be 4 incredible. For a first round, you almost never get more than 2 good first round matchups. You know, inevitably, one of those series, 1 or 2 of those end up being lopsided. That would be 4 that I'd be very,
I'm going to go out there right now on record, go on a limb and say, I think this is going to be the best first round collectively between the two conferences we've ever had. I'm talking long series, compelling moments, great storylines, like you name it. Like, look at the potential matchups in the Western Conference. Well, first of all, just to play in alone. Those couple of days, like how good is that going to be? I think the first round, once we're finally there, where there's only 8 teams left, those matchups and what we're going to get in the first round over that 2.5 weeks is going to be better than it's ever been in the history of this league.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
All right, let's run through really quickly these other games. Not really go in depth, but just talk big picture takeaways. The 76ers go into the Los Angeles Clippers, into LA, and get a win over the Clippers in dominant fashion, 121-107. James Harden skipped out on media session against his old team. He was out of the locker room before media was available to be let in. Legs, I always chuckle at those ones because to me it's – no interview could be worse than ducking out on the media session after a bad loss like that. But what do you make of this one, and what do you make of the fact that the Clippers now have lost 3 of their last 5? Their only wins have come against Portland, who's trying desperately to lose every game, so they really don't have any good wins. What do you make of this little slump they're in?
It makes you question a lot with this team. At one point, go back, maybe a month ago, 6 weeks ago, it looked like the Clippers had gotten it together to such an extent that, it looked like, hey, maybe this is the team that's the biggest challenge to Denver in the Western Conference. And it's barely been 500 basketball since then, over a very long period of time. And so I don't know. Like, I still look at them with the guys that they have and with Kawhi and like what he's capable of doing when he gets fully locked in a series. And I still think that's going to be a very tough out, but there's no other way to describe them than inconsistent. That is the word that describes the Clippers. And right now, as we sit here, I'm not exactly sure what that's going to give us as we head into the playoffs.
The other game, Miami Heat dominate the Cleveland Cavaliers. No Donovan Mitchell, 121-84. The Cavs, you know, hit the injury bug here and have kind of slid a little bit. They've lost three in a row. I think they've lost now six of their last eight. So they're in a little bit of a funk after playing such good basketball, but a lot of it is injury. Do you read anything from this game on either side for Cleveland or for Miami?
I have more respect for Cleveland than that. I mean, this is a 37-point loss, you know, this late in the year. And I think they've been playing long enough without Donovan Mitchell. But some nights it's going to get you. I still think at full strength that's going to be a very difficult team to beat because of their guard play combination with the size, and then they have the shooting. I think they check every box that what you need offensively with breakdown guards, bigs, and then shooting. They've got all three, but they obviously didn't have all three last night. And for Miami, it just continues to be this roller coaster ride, man. Like, you know, we don't know. Like, but that's a team because of the respect that we have for them collectively and with their coaching that, you know, is like, you're not going to, you know, you haven't heard the last of them. And that was a very impressive performance for them. But knowing them, they'll follow that up by, you know, beating Golden State and losing to Portland. I mean, that's kind of what their season has been for Miami.
Yeah. And then the last game, Sacramento goes into Orlando and gets the win. This is a very impressive win for Sacramento. We both love Orlando, love what they've been doing. We talked about them last week and raved about them. But in this one, they fall to the Kings, 109-107. The implication of this one, I want to stay with the Sacramento Kings. I feel like they, more than the other teams in the play-in at this moment, should be desperate to avoid the play-in. I would hate for the Kings to be in a situation where, okay, you're going to face Dallas. They should be favored. At home, you should be favored against Dallas. But if you drop that one, the Lakers and the Warriors, whoever comes out of that round, that is so much of like baggage that you would have to play for your playoff hopes all season long come down to those teams. So for me, I think this was a very impressive win because a loss would have really cost them.
I agree. They went in there too. And they were talking about one of the best defensive teams in the league. And particularly their starters were unbelievable. They had four guys had big nights for them against a physical defensive team that plays as hard as anybody in this league consistently every night. And they went in there and they did what they had to do. And they win a tight game on the road that was really a nail biter the entire second half. This is the kind of win that, you know, look, the Kings, we know what they've been for the last couple of years. I just think we always fall into the trap of relative to, and then we start listing teams in the Western Conference, like comparing them, the benchmark being these other teams. We don't really buy into the Kings being a big threat, but this is the kind of game that this late in the year, this is a big one for them.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, tonight's slate, Pacers Clippers might be the best game on the slate tonight. The Clippers struggling, the Pacers desperate to get the win. So that'll be interesting. And then you've got a lot of these lopsided matchups legs tonight. A lot of teams that just should win outright. Celtics, Hawks, Knicks, Pistons, Nuggets, Grizzlies, Suns, Spurs. So on paper, there shouldn't be a whole lot of drama tonight, but there's enough games that, you know, one or two of those is going to turn out to be something interesting. That does it for our show today, guys. We ran through a lot of games from the weekend because it was really interesting. Oh, I forgot to ask you, do you have any March Madness thoughts? Do you have like a quick March Madness takeaway from this weekend?
No, I think that I'm a little bit surprised that we kind of restored order with the higher seeds winning games. Usually you get maybe some of those teams slipping through to the Sweet 16. So I was just a little bit disappointed with that, but my big game is tonight. Iowa Hawkeyes, baby. Yeah. Caitlin Clark.
Yeah.
8:00 against West Virginia. I will be dialed into that one.
Yeah, that one should be a great one. Real quick, who do you have? Who's the most impressive team you've seen so far in the men's bracket?
I still think UConn is the most impressive team. I just don't think they've got a weakness at all. And they have a very serious approach to what they're doing. And you can just tell there's no complacency whatsoever, despite the fact they won it last year. Their messages are sent like trip after trip up the floor. They're the best team. It's going to take somebody playing, I think, way above their head and have one of those special nights shooting the basketball to beat them.
Yeah. There you go, guys. Caitlin Clark tonight. Maybe we'll talk about her tomorrow on the show. Maybe that's the big story in the basketball world. Why not? Everybody, we appreciate you tuning in. Don't forget to hit that like button. Please do us a favor. Rate and review our show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you have. Help us grow it. When you make leave a rating, it sends it out to other people who might be interested in the show, and we appreciate it. Hit that like button on the way out. We'll see you tomorrow.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.